Meeting will come to order. We're trying to figure out how to keep the computer awake for the last presentation. It went to sleep last time. Are we ready to have...
This is the key here. Put the sound down to nothing.
I think the table is being vacated for Representative Runbeck and Jake Kennedy and Brian Baer. We have, I don't know if we have three chairs up there that we would just have all you. Members, again, we are doing some informational work. We don't have all of these bills in our possession. They're in other committees. But we think they all talk about emerging issues. It's part of our ongoing education, and so we have Representative Runbeck's House File 2337. Oh, this one is in our possession. Welcome to the committee, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if this is a first. It might be. But thank you very much. House File 2337 concerns itself with the general topic of water use in the Northeast Metro. And this is becoming an intense focus of studies, public meetings, scientific investigation, feasibility studies, and so on, with the growing consensus that the municipalities are too dependent on groundwater use. And in spite of 2 years of efforts and discussion and so on, we haven't seen any action. And so not much to show that is actually already having an impact on reducing dependence on the groundwater. The Hugo project that I have before you is action, and they are ready to go with it. The city has been very proactive in this area. City Administrator Brian Baer has led a lot of city groups, is involved with several different working groups of city managers and so on. So I will let him describe the project. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You said Mr. Baer is going first?
Yes.
Please, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brian Baer. I'm the city administrator for the city of Hugo. Thanks for hearing this bill today. We, at the city of Hugo, I serve on the DNR's Groundwater Management Area Advisory Team. Water has been a very important topic to us in the city of Hugo for a very long time. We also have a Councilmember Haas, who serves on the Met Council's Water Supply Advisory Committee. Hugo is a very rapidly growing suburb just north of White Bear Lake. So as Representative Runbeck has indicated, we have been really the focus and at the crosshairs of a lot of the discussion that's been happening in the Northeast Metro concerning use of groundwater. The City Council in the City of Hugo for quite some time has made this a priority in the city, and we have a long history of very responsible water management practices in Hugo. We think we do a very good job with water conservation, stormwater management. In the City of Hugo, when development occurs, it occurs very differently from the way that development used to occur. You normally think of development as something where you pave a lot of area and that stormwater runs off and goes down into the Mississippi River. Doesn't happen that way anymore in the city of Hugo. We infiltrate stormwater, we keep the water on site, and we use it. So the city council has adopted a series of goals related to water management, and they've directed us to do our best to implement those goals. Quite simply, the goals talk about reusing, replenishing, and reducing the use of groundwater. And so if you think about reducing, we reduce as much pumping of groundwater as we can from the ground. We have a variety of projects that are underway, projects that we've already accomplished, and another good project that we're going to talk about today. We reuse water. We have a council member that talks to us about thinking of it as recycling stormwater. We recycle everything else. We're going to do what we can to recycle water, reuse as much stormwater as we can in the city, and then finally replenish. We replenish the aquifer. So a lot of our development projects and a lot of our city's capital projects involve putting water back into the ground. And so we're getting to a point where we're putting almost as much water back into the ground as we pump through our city's municipal water supply system. That's quite an impressive accomplishment if we can get there. So what we want to talk about today are some specific projects that do exactly this. They reduce, they reuse, and they replenish. And this is a bonding request that we'd ask you to consider today. We think it's a very promising project. It's an idea that should be translated around the state. And basically what it's going to do is it's going to replace our use of groundwater on several projects with surface water. So I'd like our city engineer, Jay Kennedy, to walk through that with you. You do have two handouts that are important for you to look at. One is the one-page information sheet, and then what we'd like to walk you through is a four- or five-page packet here that talks about the projects in particular.
Three handouts in your packet. Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Jay Kennedy, city engineer for the city of Hugo. And Brian did a nice job of giving an overview of what's been going on in the city of Hugo. One of the things that I take a look at on an annual basis is how much water we use and we pump and sell to our customers. And one of the really interesting things that we find is that just under half the water that we pump and sell is used for irrigation, and that is not uncommon in communities throughout the metro area. There's a lot of landscapes that are being watered, and so out of our approximately 425 million gallons that we pump in a given year, you're right at about that 200 million gallon total for irrigation. Now we separate how we meter our water, so an individual house is going to have a meter, obviously, but we do have some of what we call irrigation accounts, and so the only thing that those accounts are used for are irrigation. Those are typically used in common space in a townhome community, for instance, or some other large business that has a separated account. And so when we take a look at those represent about 100 million gallons or 25% of our water use is through irrigation-only accounts. The nice thing there is that that's something that can be converted, which is what we're talking about doing with this bill, converting that to stormwater irrigation as opposed to potable water. Before I get into the projects that we're referring to in the bill, we do have a project that's currently underway and will be online this spring, the Onika Ridge Golf Course, located in our community, which had its own private well and pumped about 32 million gallons a year out of the aquifer, has been converted to a stormwater irrigation system. So moving forward, the golf course will no longer use those wells, but will use the stormwater and rely on that to irrigate the golf course. We're really excited about that project. I think it's a model for things to come. So we, in taking a look at the 100 million gallons that we pump through irrigation accounts, we've identified three that we see as low-hanging fruit, if you will. And we have a development, a rather large development called Water's Edge. It's about a 400-acre development in our community. We also have a development called Beaver Ponds. And then we have some city irrigation along County Road 8, which is the entrance to our community. Those three accounts represent about 50 million gallons per year in irrigation. One of the things we have available to us in the city of Hugo is water. So stormwater represents, we have about 10 times as much stormwater that runs off and leaves our community than we pull out of the ground in a given year. So we have water available, and that's really important when you take a look at converting irrigation systems to stormwater. We have an example in your packet for the Water's Edge project. And there's some detail in there about it, but we have the water available. We have already modeled that from a stormwater perspective. There is enough water available to make the conversion. You can imagine a typical small pond on a commercial site. That's not going to work for this type of application. You have to have some water. We've taken a look at that, and we are confident that we can make that change. We've actually initiated conversations with the Homeowners Association They're very excited about cooperating with the city. Obviously, they have a vested interest from a cost and an environmental standpoint. So in summary, the three projects that we're asking for funding for, we would be able to reduce the pumping, and again, with the theme that Brian talked about, reduce the pumping by 50 to 60 million gallons per year. That's a pretty large percentage of our current groundwater pumping. We'd be able to reuse that same amount of water for irrigation. The other nice thing about that is we're now taking stormwater and basically infiltrating it, which helps us do two things. One is replenish the aquifer, because that sinks into the ground. It also allows us to remove phosphorus, which is another big thing that the watershed districts and other state agencies are taking a look at, is the effect that that has on our water bodies. It will allow the city to grow by as much as 800 homes without changing our water appropriations through the DNR, because we've created some capacity. And I guess on the downside, and this is one of the challenges as a water utility, by reducing the water we sell, we reduce revenue. But we do still have a fixed cost to maintain our water utility. And we would lose about $3 million in revenue over about a 20-year period by removing these irrigation accounts from our system. And so it's a bit of a challenge. Water conservation and revenue don't tend to work together in the case of a water utility. So with that, that's the description of the projects. Brian, I don't know if you want to add anything as a summary. Otherwise, we're open for questions.
Representative Detmer has a question.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. And this could be for Mr. Kennedy or Mr. Baer. I like your three R's, reduce, reuse, and replenish. That might be a catchy thing for the whole state. But have you seen any other communities that have gone this route?
Mr. Baer?
Thanks for the information.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Detmer, we have, there are some other very good examples that are stormwater reuse projects that have been implemented. Mr. Kennedy talked about one that we've just completed here in the city of Hugo, reusing stormwater at the Onika Ridge Golf Course. That one is going to be turned on here in the spring and used for the first time, and that's an exciting project. There are others that have been done in the metro. This is a fairly unique approach, the way that in this case we're taking pre-existing irrigation systems within homeowners associations and figuring out how to convert them and within the context of a city water utility. So this is a little bit unique from some of the other projects that you might have seen.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I note in your summary and also from the article that was in our handout from the Star Tribune that you intend to remove a sizable amount of phosphorus from water bodies. I'm just wondering how that's accomplished. I'm not a chemist, but my concern is that if you're putting it back into the aquifer or, you know, spreading it over golf courses, I'm just wondering how that's accomplished.
Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. One of the things that the watershed districts are requiring, at least most of them, is the infiltration of stormwater. So the way that development, as development occurs, areas to infiltrate water are created. The infiltration process itself is what helps remove that phosphorus. So the grass would take some of that phosphorus out, let's say, whatever vegetation is there, as well as the soil itself. And then eventually, as that water makes its way down to the aquifer, it continues that purification process. So the infiltration itself removes the phosphorus.
Follow-up? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just so if I say this, I just don't want anyone of the advocates to call me until, like, June. Okay, because I am interested in doing this. But my question is, you say you're going to have 800 new homes or have the ability to put 800 new homes in. Are you looking at getting your systems ready for, like, a gray water system where you use the shower water, the laundry water, the toilet water, and all the others to do the outdoor irrigation and watering and stuff like that? Are you looking at that? Because frankly, that's what we're going to eventually have to do, not just locally, but nationwide with water.
Is the engineer or administrator, Mr. Kennedy?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. Our council, if they were able to, I believe, would support exactly what you're suggesting, having a gray water system in place. I think some of the challenges we have here in the state of Minnesota is I think some of the plumbing codes and some of the other building codes are really not in a position to allow us to do that. As an alternative, what our council is asking us to do is to find ways with every development that comes in to have water reuse in there so that at least stormwater is being used for irrigation. So actually having a separate pipe system within a development where you've got single-family homes, that is something that we are looking at as well, but that's not proposed as part of this bill.
And Madam Chair, just for the other members, that, and I know there's a number of people, it's one of the few times I yearn to have past Representative Krinke around because he kind of got it, but I know there's others here, and that is something that we need to work on because this water issue is not going away. And gray water systems can literally save millions of gallons, which is another way of not using our aquifers.
And some of these members, you recall we visited Lewis and Clark in southern Minnesota, and as we've been thinking about that project, I mean, part of what they were looking for was a water source to continue the development in their region, economic development. But it begs the question, if you already have a water problem and that solution leads to more development, is it a self-defeating proposition? So I think that's what we're struggling with here as we look at not just yours, but I think all of the issues of water supply. Yes.
Understand that any gray water system and the code systems that would have to be changed would be someone at this in these two buildings here would probably have to work 3 or 4 years to make it actually happen. It's a long, long process in the building code. It's not something we can do overnight.
Mr. Baer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The issue with development, Hugo is a developing community, and the Metropolitan Council has allocated and directed growth to our community. And so that we feel like that growth is going to occur. The benefit of this system for us is that we don't need to make additional improvements to our water supply system to accommodate 800 homes if we are more efficient with the use of water. So it may delay some infrastructure improvements that we might need to make. That is the reason that this matters, not to really promote additional development in the city.
Representative Matt Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for Mr. Baer, could you talk a little bit about the financial impact to the city? The city obviously draws water, sells water. This is actually going to deplete that. Could you talk about how much money you're going to be taking out of the normal distribution system and what the financial impact might be to the city of Hugo for that?
Is that Mr. Baer?
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Dean. That's a good question. There is a financial impact to the city on doing projects like this. This is the primary reason why the city wouldn't do one of these projects on our own, because we sell water as a municipal water utility. It's an enterprise fund, and we need to break even on this fund. And so by taking municipal water offline and allowing surface water to be used instead of municipal water, we don't get the water revenue, plain and simple. But we still have to continue to operate our water utility. And so just in the Water's Edge project alone, just one development within the city of Hugo, if we make the conversion, they irrigate enough in Water's Edge to account for about $115,000 per year in revenue to our water utility. That's revenue that's lost to us. And so that's why we think that there's a little bit of assistance that would be necessary to help with projects of this type, but we think this is a good model potentially to follow. Very difficult to balance the pros and cons as a municipality when we look at the lost revenue.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Baer. And I think that's a really good point to look at. We're asking cities to reuse water, and we're trying to have cities rely more on surface water and less on aquifer water. And this is another case of no good deed going unpunished. Here we see the city trying to do the right thing and implement such a program. And the cost to the city of Hugo just for one tiny slice of this is $115,000 a year in revenue, which we all know for cities is a big amount of money. So I think that we do need, if we are serious about separation and about moving towards this, we have to realize that cities are going to take a hit on this, and we need to figure out how to make this, how to incentivize cities to do the right thing. And I would applaud Hugo for stepping forward and jumping out ahead of it, saying we're going to do this anyway. So thank you for the idea. I think it's a cool idea that could be replicated cities across the state.
And Representative Radin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of comments. I'm unfortunately, Lyndon's not here, because I'm not sure if 40 years ago we were having lots of hearings about water to the extent that we are today, and I think that's subject to actually increase as we move forward. Jurisdictions throughout the country have different regulations. Santa Fe, New Mexico, do not allow you to capture the stormwater on your property. It actually has to go to where it's supposed to go. And, you know, my question to you is sort of, in some ways, two parts. Charging for water as enterprise fund is always a tough thing, because when you raise the water rates by a quarter of a cent, you have people sometime outraged. And I would just ask those people, do they buy a bottle of water for 99 cents at their local Super America when they're out shopping? Because it's probably 1,000 to 2,000 times more expensive when they do that. My question is, when you look at these numbers regarding the reuse of the stormwater, is that based on a 10-year average rainfall? I mean, how are those numbers calculated to make future determinations?
Kennedy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative, are you asking about the actual use by the Homes Association, or are you talking about how much water we have available? I want to make sure I clarify.
Representative Dean.
Well, my understanding, the use of the stormwater in many ways, so it would be, you know, all areas. It appears that you have some holding areas that you're looking at. Is that primarily for the Homeowners Association?
Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. I think, Representative, you're referring to the map that we have in the packet that shows some holding ponds within the development. Those ponds were created to provide stormwater treatment and management when the development was created about 8-9 years ago. The drainage area that flows through those ponds, we've modeled over the past 20 years to figure out how much water has come through this area based on rainfall data. And we have what we believe to be more than enough water than what is needed to irrigate within the development. So we're very confident that we can take the water out of those ponds, use that for irrigation within the development, and not create a situation where they either dry up or create some other type of an issue where there's a lack of stormwater. I don't know if that's answering your question. I hope it does.
Madam Chair, yes, it does. I would just be curious if you've done some calculations to determine what happens if we have 2 or 3 years of minimal rainfall in the particular area and they're not replenished. What does that then add back into the stress on the system that you currently have?
Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative, in terms of taking a look at what we've seen as the rainfall through here, we're only looking at taking a percentage of a typical annual rainfall, so it would have to get pretty dire before we believe it would dry up or have the type of issue that you're outlining.
We have no more questions. If you have concluding comments,
Madam Chair, I want to say that in the future, cities, I think, are going to be a prime focal point for all of the efforts regarding water. And you know, we need to be in a position, I think, as a legislature to encourage cities. And I think when we've got folks like these that are proactive and stepping out, it's a great sign. And hopefully we'll see a lot more of it.
And members, before they leave, and this is probably to all of the issues before us, to remind people, last year in the Omnibus Legacy Bill, There was $537,000 specifically for the White Bear Lake issue. That's investigate groundwater and surface water interaction in and around White Bear, and it goes on. And then $1 million the first year, $1 million the second year for metropolitan regional groundwater planning to achieve water supply reliability and sustainability, including determination of a sustainable regional balance of surface water and groundwater. It goes on, but then it says by January 15, 2014, the commissioner shall submit an interim report, and we do have that. We didn't put it in your packets. If there's any interest in that, we certainly could. That's only an interim report, so they haven't quite completed their work, but we assume we did get a smaller update on the feasibility assessment of alternative water supplies in the Northeast Metro. So there's been some money allocated and significant work, I think, at the Met Council on some of these issues, but no final reports for us to depend on. So thank you so much for coming.
Great, thank you. And this would be, you know, an action. You know,
yes.
Yeah, there's been lots of discussion. This is action.
Yes. So,
thanks very much.
Thank you.
And then we'll have Representative Fisher, and he's joined by Matt Kramer and Scott Miller. Welcome to the committee. This bill we do not have in our possession.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today on the water issues that we have throughout the area. As you heard before, there's a lot of thinking that we have to do differently on water as we go forward. Water is not something that we can take for granted. It's not that we're in crisis mode yet. If we start doing the right things today, we're going to be able to head off a lot of problems in the future. What we're doing is bringing it from a little different angle today. Up in the White Bear Lake area, one of the things that we've realized is that a lot of the problems that we're having is because we've not managed our groundwater in a sustainable way. And that is what's happening up in the White Bear Lake area. White Bear Lake area is a canary of what's going on. It's tied to the reservoir. It's tied to the aquifer that is supplying the region from the Prairie du Chien aquifer. And the studies have shown that they're closely tied together. In the past, the request we have right now is for augmentation. In the past, when the lake used to be augmented, the studies that were done by the DNR back in 1998 were showing that over 80% of the water that had been put in the lake in the past went into the underlying aquifers. And this raises a new area that we have to keep a mind on, is that what are we doing to help influence a quicker recharge of the aquifer? And this is not the only area that has that capability. There are other areas, but this is one of the things that we have to keep in mind, that we have an opportunity here that can help augment the lake to restore the lake level, but at the same time help recharge the aquifer, not only for that local area, but it's something that will have a regional impact, will help across the region. And that's one of the things that we have to start doing, is thinking about not only how we're using and conserving water, but what are things that we can do to help influence the recharge of the aquifer, and think of it as a reservoir instead of just something that we draw from, but also something that we could supplement. And that's some of the discussions that when Chair Hausman was mentioning about the money that was being put up in the metropolitan area, there's some things that the Met Council has done to treat water to release to help start recharging the aquifers in different areas. And so this is another method. I have some folks from the local chambers here that I'd like to have speak on the issue that can get to it. They've been leading the efforts. What I'm very proud of is the White Bear Chamber that I'm a member of has been leading the efforts on conservation. I'd like to turn it over to Scott Miller here to explain their efforts, and then Matt Kramer.
Mr. Miller, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, I'm Scott Mueller. I'm immediate past chair of the White Bear Area Chamber of Commerce. I am on their Save the Lake Committee and was on the Lake Level Resolution Committee for the Conservation District of White Bear. In recent media, and recent meaning the last year and a half, this issue has really turned from an issue that was looked at as wealthy landowners around the lake, that this is their issue and we're trying to restore their value, to a regional issue. The media in the last year and a half has focused on the regional nature of the decline of White Bear Lake. White Bear Lake is in essence a tank for the aquifer. When White Bear Lake, when the aquifer declines, White Bear Lake declines along with it. The decline here has been substantial. The water volume has reduced significantly, well over 25%. And the prospect of it coming back naturally is very dim. The USGS has done several studies and continue to study this. The Met Council is looking at it. But we're looking at advancing the issue of remedying the lake level. And so our concern is about augmenting the lake. We want to put more water into the lake so it replenishes this vital reservoir for the aquifer. In addition to that, the White Barrier Area Chamber has started last year a significant conservation effort with our business community. Over 50 businesses joined the conservation effort. The city of White Bear Lake in itself is down 20% in their consumption of water. And quite honestly, in my own business in the community, we've reduced our consumption 42%. We still wash our hands. We still do everything that we need to. But we've reduced our consumption dramatically simply because we're paying attention to conservation. The White Bear Area Chamber is going to be extending this to the homeowners this year, as well as other organizations like H2O for Life. So we believe from the Lake Level Resolution Committee that there are two solutions to remedying the lake level. One is we draw less from the aquifer, which is our conservation effort, and then the second one is to augment the lake. Surface water is changing over to surface water is certainly a long-term solution, but that's a separate issue from the augmentation issue. And I'll pass it over to Matt Kramer from the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce.
Mr. Kramer, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you, members. As Mr. Mueller noted, our chamber and the White Bear Lake Chamber of Commerce.
Matt Kramer, President and CEO of the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our two chambers have been working together addressing not only the larger issue of groundwater use versus surface water use, but more importantly, the notion that White Bear Lake is a regional economic asset, and quite frankly, as Mr. Mueller noted, the USGS has demonstrably demonstrated that absent our remedy, the lake will continue to decline. It has an extraordinarily small watershed. The lake's decline is not linked to precipitation in the climate. It is linked to the fact that there is increased groundwater usage. The lake is down 6 feet now. There have been public beaches in Ramsey County that have been closed for 8 years now. Citizens unable to use the lake. The economic values around the lake have been depressed. Lake augmentation using surface water, ultimately from the St. Paul Water Regional Services coming out of the Mississippi River, is one way to help restore the lake and restore those economic values. It's extraordinarily important that we emphasize conservation. It's also important, though, that we continue to recognize that absent our intervention, this lake will not improve. Our chamber and the White Bear Lake Chamber and our many partners, members, are committed to restoring this lake. Madam Chair, thank you.
And to any of you, the committee administrator just called attention to this picture, which she assumes was taken from different perspectives. Otherwise, the bridge has disappeared because you can now walk across the land.
Yes. Madam Chair, Manitou Island is now Manitou Peninsula, and many homeowners and indeed businesses on the lake, it's not just a matter of not having your dock. It's a matter of, I suppose, if land is value, your land value has increased tremendously because you now own a lot of lake bottom that used to be lake.
And members, just to give you some sense, this is still emerging as the Met Council does some of the work. But we do already have some hints of price tag. They gave us in preparation for today an update, February of 2014, in which they say the capital costs for the augmentation system are estimated at $50 to $55 million. If nutrient removal is required, it could increase the capital cost by an additional $40 million. So it is daunting.
Yes.
Madam Chair, we have some other information that I think Mr. Kramer can share to help shed a little bit more light on that.
Mr. Kramer.
Madam Chair, members, recent engineering analysis hopefully shows that those numbers are in decline as we spend more time and more effort. And indeed, the White Bear Lake Conservation District has spent over $400,000 of their own money hiring an engineering company here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. Recent estimates, are much more in the mid-$20 million range. I recognize that's still a significant sum, but it's certainly less than what we've been dealing with. We expect to be coming back to the committee, working with Representative Fisher and Senator Wieger in the Senate, for a very modest request to complete the engineering analysis so we know exactly what we're dealing with. But I'm extraordinarily hopeful that instead of the early estimate, we're going to be half, perhaps even less than that.
Representative Albright has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the point about you're taking water of a quality and type from one resource and you're moving it to another that has a character distinctive of its own. And you've, and as Chair Hausman already elaborated, that comes at a great price. But barring that, there has to be a concern with invasive species. There has to be an issue in terms of the water table and the water column in terms of how do you preserve the integrity of the distinctiveness of the lake water versus, you know, river water. Mm-hmm. And who pays for that on an ongoing basis?
Is that Mr. Kramer or Russell?
Madam Chair, member, those are great questions. First of all, the interesting thing is in the late 1800s, engineers for the City of St. Paul designed a water solution for the City of St. Paul in which Mississippi River water is pumped out of the Mississippi approximately near Fridley and flows through natural gravity through a series of settling lakes in Badness Heights in North Oaks before it finally is sent to the treatment facility in Maplewood. Each time it goes through those settling lakes, sediment is removed naturally. Chemicals are added to help accelerate that sediment removal. And ultimately, by the time you get to the last lake in the chain, you're left with water that at present, and we have to complete the engineering analysis, is extraordinarily close to the quality of the water in White Bear Lake. Additional treatment undoubtedly will be necessary, but it's not a matter of taking extraordinarily bad water and turning it into good water. It's already been taken much of the way there itself. You also pointed out the Mississippi River obviously has zebra mussels, and the engineering estimate includes filtering for invasive species.
Representative Albright.
In terms of those holding and settling lakes, or as you work down the, is there a timeline in terms of how long does that take to occur? Is it over years?
Madam Chair, member, I genuinely don't know. I suspect St. Paul Regional Water Services would know. It certainly is not a matter of years. The water is going through reasonably rapidly. I believe, and I may have this incorrectly, that the lakes themselves represent about 45 days of usage for the customers of St. Paul Water Services. So to answer your question, my suspicion would be there's about, at any given time, about 45 days worth of drinking water or available drinking water that would be treated in those lakes.
Representative Clark?
Yeah, just a quick question. I think I heard you say the precipitation has been the same, and there's no climate cause here. Separate from precipitation, what are you attributing it to? I see that you're talking about increased population. Is that what it is? It's all increased population?
Kramer.
Madam Chair, member, absolutely. The USGS study was scientifically based, and their concern was, could low precipitation events over a period of years, essentially a drought, contribute to the lake? And the answer is, of course. What they were able to demonstrate is that this low water event for the last 8 years is not linked to precipitation. So what we have is, we've certainly had lean years in Minnesota, we've also had wet years, but the ultimate decline of the lake, now over 5 feet, is most likely linked to increased groundwater usage from neighboring communities, and thus the emphasis on conservation.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Hausman, and to Representative Clark. That same report also did show at the same time that they were studying what was happening with precipitation. They were showing that the one variable that did change significantly was the amount of water that was being pumped out of the aquifer by wells.
Thank you.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I remember reading something about this thing, that the lake bottom was porous, and so when the draft came on the surrounding wells, that it was pulling it right through the bottom. And I don't know if anything's going to be done about sealing the bottom, if I'm reading the right stuff. But what is the... You've been talking about the St. Paul Regional Water Services holding lakes. Is that what was created some time ago, and what lakes are those? Are they recreational lakes, or?
Mr. Kramer?
Madam Chair, member, those lakes were created in the late 1800s as part of a drinking water system for the City of St. Paul. I may get the names wrong. I believe they're Gilliphin Lake, Sucker Lake, Badness Lake. I may be missing one. They are not recreational lakes. You can fish from the shore, but swimming and boating are not allowed because ultimately those lakes are then, in the last stage, put into a gravity feed to the treatment facility in Maplewood, where then it is treated and used for communities across the East Metro.
Well, Madam Chair, are they surface rainwater as well as river water or whatever? What is it collecting from a number of sources? We're going to run out of water in the Mississippi here, too, in the low times when everybody's starting to use water from that. As a matter of fact, I think the Minneapolis chain of lakes at one time was serviced, if it not yet, and still may be, when they go into Brownie Lake on Glenwood near Highway 394, there's water that was pumped from the Mississippi. I don't know if it still is or not, but so.
Mr. Kramer?
Madam Chair, member, I certainly can't speak to Minneapolis. The lakes obviously would, it's not only Mississippi River water, but it's any rainwater that may fall. I would note, though, that the combined DNR permit authorization for both the St. Paul Regional Water Services and Minneapolis Water accounts for 2% of the available Mississippi River flow. So 98% of the available Mississippi River, just a half mile south of here in downtown St. Paul, is going by untouched.
Representative Fisher, to this point?
Thank you, Chair Houseman, Representative Earhart. The other part that goes into this, and this is why it's so critical that we're managing the aquifer these days, is trying to do what we can to support it, because as you referenced the lean times, when the lean times happen on the river, you need a backup system, and that's when wells still have to be available to help supplement what's going on. And if we continue to use the wells at the rate that we are, and we drain the aquifer now, we won't have that backup when we get to the lean time. So what it is we're not saying we shouldn't have pumping out of the aquifer. We need to be doing it in a sustainable way. That's not occurring now. And that's why it's real critical we find ways to have balance, but also to help provide that recharge of the aquifer in the times we have the excess water.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of some general comments, I guess. It's really been interesting for me to be on this committee. I haven't been on it before, but tour the state of Minnesota, what were we out, like 20 days or something and around the state, but water was really an amazing focus of our efforts. And, you know, much of the state has too much water, some of it has too little, and then I remember on Legacy we're draining a lake, you know, so that we can get the right kind of, so that we can have duck hunting on it. So water is just fascinating to me, and I know Chair Wagenius has been, when I served on her committee, she was really focused for years on water and drilling and figure out where our status was, and it's, you know, monitoring and just honest pricing of water and those sort of things, and it's hard to have those discussions, and she's been a great leader on that, as you have. And then out of this comes some, you know, Peter Fisher has really embraced us and done a great job, and it's neat to see that, but it's neat to see the community people too. And I kind of want to give them credit. Mr. Kramer has been it's amazing. I wouldn't imagine when he worked for Governor Plunkett, he's focused much on water, but he's really embraced this and is quite scholarly, as you can hear him speak about it. And it's brings a really valuable piece to this discussion. So thank you. And all the others for talking about it, and clearly White Bear Lake is something that we can all focus on. It is the canary. I mean, it's something that it's very easy to see if you get over there, and there's a beach on the north side I used to go to as a kid, and I mean, you could walk and walk and walk and walk now. I mean, it is a long way before you get to water. it's amazing. So thank you for letting me say a few words, but thank you, Mr. Kramer.
Representative Albright.
I have a couple of questions, but the first one is more of not an opinion, but a comment in terms of, are we walking down a path that is similar to what's happening out on the West Coast with the Columbia, where we're going to become more reliant on one river for more and more of our water table usage? And I know that we irrigate plants out there, and we're not really doing that there because of our water table here. But to the point of the author, do you have any idea in terms of, if this project goes forward, do you have any clue in terms of the replenishment of the aquifer itself, how long that would take to come back?
Is that Representative?
I'll take the first shot at that. And when you take a look at the entire aquifer, the amount of water that's going in terms of the total volume in there, it'd be very small. There's going to take a lot more efforts than just this one small effort to help have a significant impact, but every amount of water that goes back in helps take pressure off whether a community needs to expand in an area, because that's one of the other challenges. We still have communities that are growing, particularly in the Washington County part, that for their water, they're too far from the surface water and they have to go down into the aquifer. And so we're kind of at a point of where people are taking a look at either limit city's growth or you give them the permit and it continues further strain. So anything you can do to help start adding water here may help helps address that part of the problem also.
Thank you. Is it true, and I just want to verify this, but I understand that that 1 foot on White Bear equals 1 billion gallons?
Madam Chair Member, yes. It's a very large lake.
So we're talking about 5 billion, with a B, billion gallons of water, just to bring it back to what's been lost over the last several years.
Madam Chair, Member, absolutely. The proposed engineering solution, to give you an idea of the magnitude, is being sized at approximately 10 million gallons a day to be pumped back into the lake. This is not going to be a garden hose that drains down to the lake. It needs to be a very big solution. And that 1 billion, by the way, is not just the surface area and the magnitude of White Bear Lake. It's the fact that you also have to account for evaporation during the summer.
Oops, I'm all right.
And so, you know, on an ongoing basis, who's going to be responsible for not only the maintenance, but, you know, we're dealing maybe with some sovereignty of the Mississippi River versus usage in communities. I'm just wondering, who's the controlling mechanism for deciding where water goes?
I'm interested in this one, too. Mr. Kramer.
Madam Chair, Member, more work to be done there, but there are some logical first choices. We need to finish the engineering analysis first to come up with a rock-solid dollar amount. The White Bear Lake Conservation District is a legal entity that could ultimately own the responsibility for somebody's going to get a water bill. If St. Paul Water Services constructs and manages this pipeline and is selling the water, now this is untreated water, so it's at an even lower price than potable water, somebody needs to get a bill. I would suspect that the White Bear Lake Conservation District, which represents a number of communities in and around White Bear Lake, would be the logical choice ultimately.
I think Representative Mahoney and I have a certain anxiety level about this if we think St. Paul Regional Water System or the City of St. Paul suddenly become a fiscal agent here.
No, that's a great idea.
Well, it will. The economics of this would be.
It's, Madam Chair, certainly the nice thing about the St. Paul Water or St. Paul Regional Water Services, it's a large, complex institution that today supplies communities, obviously not just in the city of St. Paul, but a wide variety of neighboring communities, both inner and in some cases outer suburban communities. They have the engineering expertise, they have the talent, and they have the magnitude to manage a project of this size. Again, much more work remains to be done. I think our next step here with Representative Fisher's guidance will be to finish the engineering analysis with a very modest request, but clearly more work needs to be done.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that point about the St. Paul Authority, and this is maybe a bit off point, but it goes to maybe a larger, you know, concern, is that an appointed body or are they elected?
Is that Mr. Kramer or...?
Madam Chair, Member, I believe it's appointed by the mayor of the city of St. Paul, but there's also suburban representation on that. I genuinely don't know their bylaws, so I don't know how the suburban members are appointed.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Fisher, did you want to say more to that?
I know that the city of Maplewood has representation. Thank you, Chair Houseman, Representative Albrecht. I know that in the city of Maplewood, they do have representation that is usually off their elected off their city council. They make that appointment, so they use one of their elected leaders to provide that representation.
I have Mahoney, Green, and Earhart. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just so everyone realizes, it was said on the last one when Hugo was talking about it, water is a huge cash cow for cities. It's a free product coming out of the ground or out of the river.
Taxes.
They it's a free product that's treated minimally, and then they put a profit margin on top of it and then sell it to their citizens after the citizens have been taxed to pay for the infrastructure of water. So understand that this is a cash cow for communities all across the state, whether it's coming out of a well or coming out of a river. Having said that, I think maybe St. Paul could, you know, put a little spiff on and, you know, maybe lower my water bill. But here's my question. We're allowed 2% of the surface water out of the Mississippi, both Minneapolis and St. Paul. At the present time, either St. Paul or Minneapolis or combined, how much of that 2% are they using?
Madam Chair, member, I don't know the exact number. What I can tell you is in my last conversations with both bodies, they're not pulling anywhere near the maximum permit allowed by the DNR of 2%. It's also important to note that with surface water, you know, the reality, and I hesitate to say this early in the morning, is when we have a drink of water here in St. Paul, we're drinking St. Cloud's wastewater. We return surface water, we treat it to potable standards, and then we put it back in the Mississippi. And that's the beauty of, as Representative Fisher keeps noting, water is a renewable resource. We have to treat it as a renewable resource, and we've been, I won't say negligent, but we have not done as an effective job of managing what in Minnesota is one of our cultural assets, water, to the degree possible, and thus White Bear Lake and other lakes.
To the same point, thank you, Chair Houseman, is while we are drawing water out of the Mississippi right now, we are returning almost two and a half times water back in versus what we're taking out. So in some ways, we're not taking anything out of the river. We're actually adding to it by the time it gets past Big Sky.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of things you said, if you'd clarify for me. You had said that the reason that White Bear Lake is going down is because people are taking water out of the aquifer and it's directly lowering the lake. And then you said that you're going to pump the however many gallons you're going to pump back into that lake, 5 billion, whatever it is, to get it back up to normal, but that's not going to affect the aquifer. But if the aquifer is sucking that water down, aren't you going to have to replenish the aquifer before you get that lake back up?
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Houseman. Representative Green, that's part of the calculations that they're doing, is they're realizing that as this water goes into the lake, that a significant portion of it is going to be going down in the aquifer. And the USGS is doing that part of the study. It'll be another year or so before they're done, but they're going to be able to determine how much of that water is going down below and be able to quantify that in a better method. But yes, part of that water going in is going will be going down, so it doesn't all stay in the lake.
Representative Green. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, you just said something about returning 2.5 times the water to the river that you're taking out, and I suspect that's because of the Irish drinking too much beer in St. Paul. But besides that, I have a question, Madam Chair.
You're old,
Earhart. I thought I read an article that there was some talk about sealing the bottom of White Bear Lake. Did I read that wrong? So sometimes they do that on lakes that have leaky bottoms.
Who's going to take that one?
Well, personally, I don't have a leaky bottom. But
they put in a clay mixture that seals
yes,
it.
Yeah. And that was done long time ago in Lake Phalen, if you remember, in St. Paul, many, many years ago. That isn't being talked about here. The geology, the structure of the lake is that it's a shallow basin lake. Although there are some deep areas, it's a shallow basin lake. There's no inflow into the lake. There's really no springs to replenish it. And so the outflow really comes, there's some outflow in the south and the west of the lake. And there's just this natural decline that goes into the aquifer as a result of the structure of the lake. There's been no talk or no attempt to modify the bottom of the lake at all.
Thank you.
And Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the comments about the water coming from Stearns County probably weren't helpful, but let's just never mind that just for a second. It's I've represented White Bear Lake. This is my 10th year, and I've represented before and after redistricting both sides of the lake. And those are the communities of Matamidi, Delwood, Birchwood, White Bear, and White Bear Township. And it's not a White Bear City issue by any means. It's a area of communities around the lake that are very interconnected, and this is a big deal. For over 50 years, we pumped water out of the aquifer to level the lake, and then the legislature passed a law that said that we can't do that anymore, so that there was either four or five deep water wells that actually brought the level lake of the lake up artificially through augmentation for many, many years. And many of the people in the community remember that, and they think about that, and they wonder why we're not doing that to fill up the lake again. It is boggy, and it is shallow in areas, so that you, if you drive by it, you see a very, very dramatic drop in the level of the lake that is not coming back. If you can imagine, you know, seeing actually small trees growing up and bulrushes and weeds, and it's a real issue for the lake, and it's a long-term change that's not returning. I surveyed about 3,500 people around the lake, and I received almost over 400 responses back, which is a very big sample. And 75% of the people around the lake now believe that this is not natural. It is not just a low point. It's not coming back. So that there is genuine community belief in the area that this is a problem that is not going to just bounce back by itself. So we need some help through augmentation, and that's certainly something that we're going to have to deal with long term. And it is a regional issue. It's not just a specific city issue. So I think that many times we think about these things in terms of cities, but it's more of a regional issue in nature that we're going to need some help with. Conservation is going to be part of the issue, or part of the solution with the communities, and they are all on board, meeting with the cities around the lake and the community are on board for conservation, and we'll have skin in the game. So I think long term, this is going to be an issue that we're going to be dealing with, not just in the Northeast Metro, but around the state, and it's a solution to look at some surface water solutions that we can think about and talk about moving forward. So I thank Representative Fisher for bringing this forward. I look forward to learning about your proposal and sharing any information that I have from the last 10 years from the people around the lake and solutions that have been brought forward. And I think that it should be a bipartisan effort, and also one that brings in not just one aspect of the city or the connection with the water source, but also the communities around the lake to come to a shared solution. So I applaud you and thank you for bringing this forward.
Concluding comments.
Yes, thank you, Chair Houseman. First of all, I thank the committee for its time and listening. We do ask for your support to help make this happen down the road for the augmentation. And what I'd like to mention is that you're hearing many different parts, and we heard earlier, right before us, about what is going to be happening up in the Hugo area. That's one drop. What we're seeing here is now another drop in it. We're going to help solve the solution, and you're going to be hearing more as you go forward. And what I want to say is sometimes it might seem these are all small drops, but you know what? When you start adding all the drops up, before you know it, your cup overflows. And that's what we'd like to get back to, is having our cup overflowing again. And if we do this in a sustainable way, we're going to be the envy of the country in the future, because water is going to be an issue that's going to start deciding a lot of fates as we go down the road, as it becomes a more valuable resource. And if we keep our resources managed properly, we'll be a leader in that in the country in the future. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And then we'll have Representative Ward and Representative Lohmer, I think, is in the room. You're welcome to come up if you'd like. We have, Dean Zulliger? Okay. Oh. Didn't fall asleep. That's good. And we have a couple of handouts in our packet for this as well. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Thank you very much for hearing this. Water is obviously your theme for the morning, and we have another variation on that theme. Water is a renewable resource. You were just hearing a minute ago about renewing our water resources. We can renew water unless we contaminate it in a way or with materials that don't make it possible for us to clean it up with current technology. And that's part of what we're talking about in this next bill. I am going to let the city administrator from Lake Elmo, Dean Zuliger, and Mayor Mike Pearson is also here as well to tell us more about it.
Mr. Zuliger, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'd like to thank the committee staff for getting the information out to you and for Jenny's use of her computer this morning. So the city of Lake Elmo, obviously, just by the virtue of our name, is very concerned and very cautious with the use of our water. We are recognized as one of the leaders in stormwater management. Being a Blue Star city, our stormwater practices have received national recognition, and we're one of the few communities on the east side that have true conservation rates to have our taxpayers take good care of the aquifer that we have. But unfortunately, a third of our aquifer is contaminated, and that's what we'd like to talk to you about this morning with this $4 million state bonding request for the construction of a trunk water main line. I also have, by the way, this morning with us City Council Member Mike Reeves and City Council Member Justin Bloyer with us, as this is an issue of great importance to the community. This bonding initiative has bipartisan support. Representative Ward, Representative Lohmer, and on this committee, Representative Dean and Representative Lilly, as well as our good friend Representative Fisher, who's been very helpful to us on constructing this request so that we make sure we meet all the public policy issues that need to be discussed here. If you could look at your screen, those to the side and above me, we're going to kind of take you on a PowerPoint field trip of our project. We did present this to the Senate Bonding Committee at Century College, and they found it helpful, and we will be posting this on our website for everybody to take a look at. The City of Lake Elmo's request is for $4 million of state bonding funds to provide clean, potable water to our homeowners in the I-94 corridor. This represents 42% of the project cost. The city is picking up 58% of the cost and will bond for $5.5 million. That includes some water towers and some reducing valves because the city is on two pressure systems because of its geography. The project provides the correct pressure and clean hydraulics to serve the taxpayers that are currently on PFC adulterated wells and new growth that's mandated by the Met Council. So those are the two stages. This next slide's my favorite slide. It's probably my only creativity in this side. We find ourselves squeezed in between two state agencies. The Metropolitan Council has mandated a certain amount of growth for us. We have now met that growth with sewer lines or the expectations of growth with the construction of two sewer lines this year, and are working out the details of a memorandum of understanding, as we're the only community that's under a contractually obligated, I guess, need to grow. So Met Council is on one side. On the other side, we have a court case that we're involved in with the state of Minnesota and 3M. And that court case is fraught with a lot of technical difficulties right now, but as you can see, it's literally squeezing the water out of us. So there's my creativity for the morning. Thank you. All right. The Lake Elmo mandated growth that you can see is reflected on this map, and if you take a look at the bottom of your screen, that's I-94. We run along I-94 there. Highway 5 in the middle, that runs from Oakdale to Stillwater, and then our northern boundary is Highway 36. The areas that are kind of checkerboard or patchworked on your map there represent the growth areas for the city of Lake Elmo. One is along the I-94 corridor, and then one is in what we call the Old Village, and for those of you that like to eat, it's where the Lake Elmo Inn is in downtown Lake Elmo. Those black lines that are reflected on this map are the sewer lines that are being put in by the city of Lake Elmo as part of the Metropolitan Council's Memorandum of Understanding that we have with them. So that's the I-94 corridor represented in that yellow box that just came up on the screen, and that's the Old Village. And we just constructed a $4 million trunk water main line up and down this white line here that you see that with the arrow is from the I-94 corridor Cottage Grove Interceptor Sewer all the way to the Old Village. This is an important issue in that it'll help us take a lot of private septic systems that are failing that are affecting the surface water of Lake Elmo and other parts of the aquifer, surface water areas within the Old Village. So that sewer is going to get a lot of folks off of failing septic systems and onto sanitary sewer. So Lake Elmo PFC water adulteration, part of this issue, the second part of the squeeze is simply reflected here. 30% of the Lake Elmo water aquifer is adulterated with PFCs and the metabolites of PFCs. Well number three, which we'll show you in a second, hovers at the health standard every year for acceptable PFC levels and is tested above that level in the last 18 months. So drilling a well on the I-94 corridor is not anything that we could do because it may pull contaminated water across the groundwater divide and pollute more wells. You'll see this illustrated in just a second. PFCs are persistent in the environment and they're bioaccumulative, and that is if you've got a PFC molecule in your body and you drink some PFC water, that molecule will go find that PFC molecule and it will bioaccumulate in your system. The Minnesota Department of Health at a recent meeting in New Brighton has reported that PFCs may cause significant health risks, and when we talked to the state epidemiologist about how to use the wells that are in that area, they suggested that transmitting untreated clean water down into that area would be the most prudent thing to do. What do all those words mean? Well, here's a map to kind of show you Lake Elmo as we exist today. That long light blue, and I think some of your packets may be incomplete, but that light long blue line that you see here reflected by the arrow is a groundwater divide in Lake Elmo. That yellow shaded area in the left corner, the left, what we would call the south west part of the city, is the area that is currently contaminated by PFCs. Those folks are on what are called GAC water systems. They're kind of hypercarbon filters that try to take the PFCs out of drinking water. So this is this natural groundwater divide, and as you can see, it cuts right through the Lake Elmo Park Reserve, right through Eagle Point Lake. And by the way, these GAC water filters, as Representative Ward has reminded me, are right here on the left. People in that yellow area have those systems in their basement. They're paid for by the MPCA to allow them to drink clean water. So this is the well that's contaminated, well number three. We drilled that well, we paid for that well, and then we found that that well was not usable. All right, so that's the well that we talk about that exceeds the standards from time to time. All right, the GAC filters then have to be placed in that area so people can have drinking water. Some folks just use the bottled water route. We have a lot of folks that actually do that. So PFCs are reflected in that well, in that yellow area that you see. So we wanted to put a well over here, and you would know this area is the corner of Manning and I-94 as you're heading to the state of Wisconsin. But hydrogeologists have told us that if we put a well there, a municipal well there, the cone of depression that we would create could suck the PFCs across the groundwater divide, and then we pollute more wells, and more people have to be on the GAC filters. So what we're suggesting as the city of Lake Elmo is that, and there's the groundwater divide kind of magnified, what we're suggesting is that we would use a well reflected by this circle up here above Highway 5, the green circle on this page, which is a deep aquifer well that we've drilled. Does not affect the White Bear Lake aquifer. We sat down with Representative Fisher and he shared with us his concerns. We did the hydrology work for him. We know that that does not affect the White Bear Aquifer. It's clean, untreated water that we have a good water source for. And what we want to do is take that water and trunk it from the circle, and I'll go back here so you can actually go forward. That takes it down to Inwood Avenue, which you would know as Radio Drive, and then it would basically pump the water down to Radio Drive using a booster station that we'll have to construct and serve those people along that blue arrow that you see here, the dark blue arrow that you see here, and in the I-94 corridor for the mandated growth by the Met Council and to serve the folks that are on the adulterated wells. So that's what this $4 million project would pay for, is that construction of that particular line to get people clean, potable water. Now, the city of Lake Elmo will also be constructing a water line at its own cost down Lake Elmo Avenue, so that we can get the right hydraulics and the right pressure. And this will include some of the items that you heard from Administrator Baer, by the way, who's become the city administrator's expert on water. So when he speaks with great authority. The reuse, some of the recirculation, the recycle that we talked about will be included in this particular line as we try to work with the drainage issues of our old village. That line will allow us the right hydraulics. We have to put some things called reducing valves in to get the right pressure so that we don't blow out plumbing systems. And that's this particular system that we're requesting in this $4 million ask. Now, to address the issues that you heard in the previous two discussions and the concerns of Mr. Fisher and Ms. Wagenius, we have constructed this system in a way that if we do have to hook up to surface water, there's the ability. And that is, this is the well, just to orient you again, that's got the PFCs. That well allocation, that well is no longer used, and the appropriation allocation that we've got from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources transfers to that well. So we're not adding a well, we're actually taking that well offline, transferring the allocation up to the well that's in the clean part of the city. And then that reappropriation is a reappropriation of the total. We're not adding to it, but we've also poised our system with our plans to allow for an interconnect with the city of Oakdale, Maplewood, and then St. Paul, so that if we had to draw from the Mississippi, we could draw from the Mississippi, and we've talked with the engineers at Oakdale and Maplewood to be able to do that. And then we also have another option, if the state of Wisconsin would be amenable to allowing Minnesota to draw from the surface water, to interconnect with the St. Croix River through Oak Park Heights and Stillwater, and get there that way. So if it becomes an issue of aquifer drawdown, our plumbing is in place to be able to interconnect to the Mississippi through Oakdale, through Maplewood, or interconnect to the St. Croix through the state of Wisconsin. So that's our proposal in a nutshell. We really want to get folks on clean, potable water. We thank Representative Ward and Representative Lomber for their support, Representative Dean, Representative Lilly for listening, and many others in this room that have listened to us about this particular problem that we have at this time.
We have lots of questions.
Okay.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First off, I agree that this is a crisis. I agree that it demands a solution, and I applaud the bipartisan effort of Representatives Ward and Lomer and others to try to solve it. The question I have is, you referenced at the outset that you do have the pending lawsuit, and I assume you're seeking your recovery in that lawsuit. Let's assume for the sake of discussion, and I think you will win that lawsuit, that you receive a recovery. What happens to this, assuming that you're successful here as well? You get $4 million here. Let's say you get $4 million in the lawsuit. Is there any thought in mind in terms of, so I assume that wouldn't be a windfall. Have you thought about that potentiality?
Well,
Mr. Sulliger.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Yes, we have, and it would be our intention to return that money to the state that we would receive in the lawsuit. Yeah. This is really a matter of timing right now for us, we wish we had the patience, but the lawsuit's caught up in a lot of technicalities. But if the Attorney General prevails, and we believe she will as well, we would be more than happy to return that $4 million the state's advanced us for this water project.
Follow-up, Representative Atkins?
Madam Chair, that's exactly the answer I was looking for. Thank you.
Representative Swetinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just kind of want to reprimand the city of Lake Elmo. You took away a good staffer for us. We had Becky Gumatz, I believe, that was working
my
for us.
My secret weapon.
Yes, so just wanted to do that. So thanks.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Atkins asked one of the questions that I was going to ask, too. And another question, is this contaminated area, that aquifer, can that be ever cleaned up?
Mr.
That's a great question, and I don't have an answer for you. We know that there is some stripping technology that's used. PFCs are a little bit different. Half-lights are a little bit different. Half-lights are a little bit different. Their persistence is a little bit different. We have been looking at the technology, and there really isn't a great answer except that you can maybe strip out the PFCs the best you can, but the persistent nature really makes it difficult. So that's my best answer, Representative Demers.
Follow-up,
Madam Chair. Does that just affect just the water, or is there problems with coming up through the soil and health problems there with the public, too? Or is it just, are we just dealing with water, which is important?
Another great question. Minnesota Department of Health is doing studies on home gardens to see the effect of use of this water on home gardens with respect to produce and some of those kinds of things. We have taken a look at what's gone on with fish, as you know, and other natural wildlife, but and the persistence nature of it is really the difficulty. So there are ongoing health studies as far as even going down to the home gardens to take a look at using that water on that. Right now, inconclusive.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair, I was just wondering, you probably don't want to talk, your lawsuit is with 3M, you don't want to talk about that, but hasn't 3M settled with other areas on this particular issue of PFCs?
3M does have a settlement agreement with the City of Oakdale. And we are in conversations with 3M while the technical matters of the lawsuit are being decided at the Supreme Court level. We're involved in kind of a tolling agreement. Representative Atkins can explain that a lot better than I can as an attorney. But basically what it does is it sets aside the lawsuit, allows us to talk while freezing the statute of limitations. So while these procedural appeals are going on, we have been talking with 3M, very preliminary, and just really trying to get to know each other right now.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I've got two questions. What's the cost of hooking up to the St. Paul water? I mean, if you have the plan already in place or have done some of the engineering, and why don't you?
We don't know those costs. That's something that we have not done as of yet. We know we have the interconnect and the capacity and the plumbing to be able to hook to Oakdale and then Maplewood, but I don't have an answer for you on that. I could certainly try to get that for you.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Mahoney.
Well, that would actually seem like a simple solution. I mean, I'm kind of surprised that if you got $4 million that you're requesting from the state, another $4 million or whatever millions you settle with 3M or win from 3M, wouldn't you want to have that dollar figure to know if so that you never know where the next TFCs are going to leach to. I would have thought that would have been something that you would have looked at relatively early on. So why didn't you, and when, and are you planning on?
We have not yet looked at that specifically in terms of engineering because it would take the work of Oakdale and Maplewood, and we've just approached them about this in the last year. The growth that's going to occur due to the Met Council MOU allows or mandates that we provide some clean potable water down there, but it is something that we know that we can hook into Oakdale. I don't know the specifics of Oakdale's connection with Maplewood or Maplewood with St. Paul, but I will get you that answer because it's a very good question.
And we could get that to the committee if you have something for us. Those are all the questions. Mayor Pearson, yes. Did you have some remarks you wanted to?
Well, just to follow up on the good question there, yeah, whether or not that would come in the future, I think this request would need to be done as well. We have to put the infrastructure in, and that would be supplemental, and that's kind of would seem to be a larger picture and much more studies, but this is kind of present. There's a sense of urgency that we have to it, so that's all I'd like to comment. But I appreciate visiting with many of you, and I appreciate the consideration you have for our request.
There are no more questions. Either Representative Lohmer or Representative Ward, any concluding comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I just want to thank you very much for listening to this request. The city has done a great job, I think, of making their case, and I really appreciate the fact that, and Representative Ward for carrying this bill. So thank you so much.
Representative Ward?
Madam Chair and committee members, I would just add just another comment about the lawsuits. There are other states that are also dealing with lawsuits that were not settled yet. Some of you may remember when Oakdale was cleaned up, when? Late 80s? Maybe? Early 90s? It was a long time ago. And these chemicals are persistent. They're very serious. I remember when Oakdale, Heart of Five was closed down for a while, and if you got to go by there, you saw people in hazmat suits cleaning up soil and drainage ditches and things like that. they were able to settle their lawsuit and get things cleaned up, but we are continuing to study and finding PFCs in human beings, or the study, and soils are being tested in the areas downstream from Oakdale, which would include Maplewood and Woodbury. So this is not something that is going away easily, and people need clean water. We do need to protect our waters, and I appreciate the opportunities that I've had to work with the environmental committees to learn about some of these things, and the opportunity to work with the city of Lake Elmo to help get people clean water. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Ward, the minutes of March 18th.
Madam Chair, I so move.
Any additions, corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And members, I just want to let you know that in session today, another bonding bill will be introduced. I have had my name on a number of bills as chief author, and I think Representative Ward and Representative Carlson are often partners in that. We've introduced the governor's bill, which is getting some things forward. This bill being introduced today is not one that will be able to pass Ways and Means, because it exceeds the targets that have been set for me, but it moves a lot of things into the conversation and hopefully begins that conversation and negotiation across lines. I feel a little like, what back in my management days, one of the things we often learned was you never give somebody the responsibility without the authority. And I sort of feel that that's the thing I've got right now. I've got the responsibility, but no authority. But I think the better context is to say we really all have the responsibility to say, how do we negotiate and have conversation around a package that the governor, the House, and Senate come together on, and certainly both parties are a part of that conversation. It is the, as you all know, the most difficult bill to pass because of the supermajority issue. And so it requires a significant negotiation, conversation, and bipartisan work together. So we have, unfortunately, not much time anymore for that in this very short session. But it will be one more part of the conversation today. So thank you very much. I guess we don't know our agendas for the next meetings yet. What is it? Oh, okay. We're taking a look at some veterans' memorials and other things. Okay. Meeting is adjourned.